Sports, politics, life. Back 9 Development presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Online at back9development.com.
I guess you can go ahead and blame me if you like, as Travis Kelce has hyperextended his knee in practice on Tuesday, just in advance of the season opener against the Detroit Lions. The timing, certainly not very good here, and I've been basically saying for a couple of years that Travis Kelce's been an Iron Man at his position, just going out there time after time after time, taking a beating, continuing to play, and perform at an incredibly high level. He is, to use the old adage or term, a gamer. It's exactly what Travis Kelce is. Does that mean he'll play on this Thursday? I doubt it will be his choice. And it seems like this would be one of those precautionary times where the Chiefs say, that's too quick of a turnaround. Let's hang on. Save him for Jacksonville in game two. If you get the, it'd be almost 2 full weeks then after the hyperextension, short about 48 hours of that. So 12 days to recover and get ready for the game at Jacksonville on September 17th. I don't really know anything or have any inside information, but that's typically what happens in these cases. You don't want to rush somebody back. If there's any swelling at all, the Chiefs would be inclined not to do this. Now, there are some hyperextensions or knee injuries that are discomforting or uncomfortable or painful or whatever, where it's just swelling. There is nothing at all, even remotely structural, and you don't really run any more risk of doing any more damage to the knee. If that's the case, maybe he plays. My guess is the Chiefs are a seasoned operation. They've won a couple of Super Bowls in the last 4 years. They expect to be playing in February. This is only the first week of September, and you just don't do anything here. So it looks like we're going to have the Chiefs without Travis Kelce and without Chris Jones. We don't know that for sure, but that's exactly what it looks like. And this is what great teams do. They step up and they find a way to win when things like this happen. I don't care that it's the Lions. I don't care that it's the opener. I don't care it's at home. You're playing in the NFL, and you're playing without your second and third best and most important players. So that leaves you Mahomes and Andy, basically, and the coaching staff here to figure this thing out. The last time they didn't have Travis Kelce was in 2021 because of COVID. Travis Kelce in week 16 had COVID. The Chiefs beat Pittsburgh 36-10. Mahomes was 23 out of 30 with 3 touchdowns. The leading receivers that day were Byron Pringle and Derek Gore. That's all you got to know. Noah Gray will be filling in for Travis Kelce in this game. In the Steelers game a couple of years ago, he only had 2 catches for 12 yards. So the tight end game, not a big part of the function of the Chiefs offense, where they won big over Pittsburgh in that game. This is a different challenge. This is a different Lions team. The Lions are not going to score 10. Okay? And we know that their offense was very, very, very good last year, that it really came on in the end. The Lions were not a playoff team. Their last playoff win was in 1991, but they did finish last year 8-2, and they are sold out for this year. Like, they're becoming a big, big deal in Detroit. Their offensive lineman, a fourth-year offensive lineman named Jonah Jackson, says, hey, this is getting really crazy. I was finally recognized in a grocery store this year getting vegetables. Somebody looked over and said, hey, is that Jonah Jackson? I was like, wow. It took 4 years here in Detroit for anybody to recognize who I am. He said, quote, I've been catching a little traction here in the Motor City, which is nice. Their head coach is a former tight end, Dan Campbell. He is a tough guy with a strong personality. This team plays with some swagger. Jared Goff only had 1 interception last year in his last 11 games for Detroit, and he's been to a Super Bowl. They have a tremendous young defensive end in his second year, Aiden Hutchinson, who's a kind of a legacy player from Michigan. His dad played for the Lions. It's just the right time, the right feel, the right look for the Detroit Lions. They have Iowa State's David Montgomery at running back, but what they're really counting on here is Jahmyr Gibbs, I think, to burst onto the scene and become a great running back right away. He was the 12th pick overall, their first-round selection with the 12th pick out of Alabama. This team is loaded with high first-round draft choices. It just is. They've been bad for so long, they are loaded with these players, and it appears that they've drafted pretty well, and we now think of Jared Goff in a totally different way after watching what he did in the second half of last year leading this Lions offense. So this is going to be wild. I don't think Travis Kelce will play. They said initially hyperextension of that knee. It could be a bone bruise. There are some reports out there that there's a bone bruise. That's a different type of thing. If you have a bone bruise, you probably got hit on the knee. Hyperextension a lot of times is just where you're stretching or you're running. and you hyperextend your knee. But a report out says that it could now be a bone bruise for Kelce in his knee. And if it's a bone bruise, that's obviously something different than a hyperextension. We'll see how the Chiefs treat it. I don't know anybody that expects Kelce to play in this game. And if he does, it'll be much ado about nothing, which I guess will be fine for us. We'll take that. If it becomes that, we'll take it. But here we go. Uphill climb starts. We've said the whole offseason, this won't be as easy as people think. And I haven't really given you my prediction yet on what I think the Chiefs will be. I think 13-4 is way too aggressive with this schedule. I'm going to go 12-5, but I won't be shocked if it's 10 or 11 wins. But if it's one of those seasons where the Chiefs have to cobble some stuff and put it together, they're getting a little older in some of their key areas. And when I say that, I mean Chris Jones and Travis Kelce. They're clearly a young team as they keep drafting and filling with young, unproven players. We love Trent McDuffie and his future on that defense, but we don't know 100% yet about Trent McDuffie, whether he's going to be a star or just a guy that plays in this league. There's a lot of that going on. Kadarius Toney, the wide receiver, is injury prone. We have some issues with that, certainly all around this football team. I'm going to go 12-5, and I think I'll take that right now. With this schedule, with what I know heading into week one, I will take the 12-5 and run to the bank with it. Stan Weber will be joining us in just a couple of moments, and we'll go over that and everything college football with our man Stan Weber, as we do each and every week. We move him around day to day, depending on the Chiefs schedule or the college football schedule, so that's what we're doing. Quick word or two here on the Royals, who had another balk-off win on Tuesday night. Absolutely remarkable that they've had a pair of games this year where the bases were loaded in the ninth inning and the pitcher balked. Actually, I don't know if they were loaded the first time, but it doesn't really matter. The runners advanced, so there's a runner at third, and the Royals won on a balk-off. This is remarkable that it happened once. It's incredible that it's happened twice for the Royals. In the bottom of the ninth inning last night, the key hit in this game, of course the key hit in every game, even though he'd been 0-4 prior to this, was Bobby Witt Jr. for just lacing a double down the right field line to score the tying run. The Royals were down 6-0 in this game. They tied it in the bottom of the ninth 6-6. Witt's at second. There's a runner at third. They wind up, I think, walking Melendez. And the bases are loaded, and Edwin Olivares is at the plate. And he's taking his time. Ryan Lefevre said, hey, he didn't even have his helmet on because they intentionally walked the runner right in front of him. So he was just kind of moseying out to the on-deck circle to get ready for his at-bat, and they just waved the hitter to first base. So now Edwin Olivares got to get up there. And you have to get up there by what, 8 seconds left in the pitch clock? And he barely does. I think he stepped in at like 8. And the pitcher on the mound, Santos, isn't really ready. And so he fumbles around. And he finally gets his toe on the rubber, and the clock is down to 2-1, and he sees it, and he just quick pitches. He's just like, oh, I got to throw this. That's a balk. You have to come set. And Santos did not come set, and the Royals won. This is the bad part of the clock, and I think they need to use a little more common sense here in the ninth inning or the game on the line or something like that. The umpiring wasn't great here. When you intentionally walk the runner to first, let's go easy on the clock. Let's make sure the hitter's ready. Let's not put the game on the line and take it out of the player's hands. The Royals probably deserve a win. They've had some bad luck this year, too, in addition to being awful. They probably deserve to get one gifted to them. But I don't know that anybody ever wants to see the clock affect the outcome of a game like it did, the pitch clock, like it did on Tuesday night. Nobody wants to see that. I can't imagine that would have possibly happened in the World Series. I think the umpire would have called timeout and said, wait a second, let's reset the clock, let's get going, let's finish this game here. There is no reason to hurry the game in the bottom of the ninth inning, tied 6-6 with the bases loaded. And that's how the game ended, in a hurry-up fashion where the pitcher balked because he didn't come set, trying to hurry the pitch before the clock hit zero. Royals will take it, will always take it, but that is a rough way for baseball to finish a game. Look, it's not about the White Sox, the Royals. Neither's in contention. That's not the issue here. The issue is Major League Baseball. Do you want games ending like this? I suspect they will be studying this in the offseason and tweaking this and tell it, at the very least, if there's no rules change, telling the umpires it's your discretion at critical moments to manage the game and make sure the players decide the outcome and not the clock. All right, Stan Weber is going to join us here in just a second. It's brought to you by TicketsForLess.com. Their promo code these last 2 days leading up to the Chiefs-Lions is KKHI Chiefs 10. That's KKHI Chiefs 10. Use that promo code and you are good to go at TicketsForLess.com. You will save 10% off all things Chiefs. It can be parking pass, VIP tailgate pass, any tickets at TicketsForLess.com. The promo code is KKHI Chiefs 10. That's KKHI Chiefs 10. Or call 913-685-3322. BeStock.net, this is the last week they're offering their doorbusters. This is it. Many of you have jumped in and gotten the Apple iPad, brand new, full warranty, $299. That's a crazy Apple deal. $299 for an all-new, brand-new, full-warranty, intact iPad, $299. They still have several 70-inch TU-7000s left, the Samsung 4Ks, for just $399, and they'll deliver it to you for $25. That's crazy. BeStock.net. There is no dash. B-S-T-O-C-K. BeStock.net. Or just give them a call over there or visit them at 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. The Blue Mount Hotel in Manhattan is a proud sponsor of KKHI, hosting your group, your wedding party, your rehearsal dinner, receptions, reunions, and much, much more. If it's around K-State or Manhattan and you've got a group, the Blue Mount Hotel wants to host you and show you the best possible time. BlueMountHotel.com is the website. Don't forget they've got a brand new private party space that's awesome for quarterly meetings or just team building within your company. Those are always great things. Or maybe you'd like to have the cool boardroom as your satellite office for a week if you travel around the state of Kansas doing business. They've got that for you as well. If it's business, if it's social, it's Bluemont Hotel, including a rooftop patio and an awesome pre-function area. BlueMontHotel.com. And Dr. Jeremy and his team at Fry Orthodontics, 13 locations in and around Kansas City where you can get your perfect smile for life. Invisalign and braces are the same price. Your teenager will have a great experience. I get emails all the time from parents and grandparents who say, you know what? Our teenager's having fun doing this because they just make it a positive experience, something you don't dread. That matters. It matters a lot. Why wouldn't you want to work with people who want to work with you to make it fun? Get the job done right. Get that beautiful smile, but just make it as enjoyable as possible. That's Fry Orthodontics. That's their mission every single time where your smile is just the start. Stan Weber makes me smile. I like talking football with Stan. We got Chiefs Lions. We'll also talk KUK State in Missouri. It's up right now on KKHI. Hit it!
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch, or online at joslynsjewelry.com.
All right, let's go right to the man, Stan Weber, joining us now. He knows all about these injuries. He's probably had a hyperextended knee a time or two in his playing days. Will Travis Kelce play? Will he won't play? Hello, Stan Weber. How are you?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Thanks for having me on. Football is full gear now. NFL's kicking off. College had a great week or week and a half, however you count week zero. I cannot wait to get fully into this with the Chiefs.
I got a little lucky this week. I so badly wanted to have you on the podcast on Tuesday after the holiday weekend and everything and all the football. And I thought, no, let's wait until a little closer to Chiefs game. We waited one extra day. And then, of course, this happened with Travis Kelce. His brother, Jason Kelce, on a Philadelphia radio station on Wednesday morning said, Travis is going to have a chance to play. It all just depends on the swelling, that it's a hyperextension of bone bruise. Jason said he actually did this one time at a bonfire carrying wood and was able to play the following Sunday. What are your thoughts? Should the Chiefs even try this? And how much of a say do you think Travis Kelce will have?
Well, I think Travis Kelce will have a big say in it. And hyperextension is something that I'm familiar with. It's funny when I talk about Jalen Daniels of Kansas and we talk about his back injury, I kind of throw my arms up and go, I don't know how that works. I don't know how your back heals and you know, just run down that path. But with hyperextensions, I've experienced it. And I do know usually everything is in order. Hyperextension just means that your knee got bent the wrong way. Usually it's straight. If it's straight, then you're not tearing anything. It's just stretching stuff that bounces back, but it's very painful. Then they add a bone bruise in there. There's discussion about that. The best information coming about the Kelces comes from the Kelces. with their podcast, and now Jason live on radio in Philadelphia on Wednesday. He's going to give you pure information. Those guys have become very comfortable talking to the public. And so when he says that he thinks Travis is going to be fine, all ligaments are in order, and that he's just a pain tolerance type of deal, I say that makes all the sense in the world, because that's what I've experienced, Kevin. It's a pain tolerance. So if he can get some adrenaline flowing and move well enough where he feels comfortable that he can be effective, then I think everyone else can say medically, there's no reason for us to slow him down. It's not as if it's going to be something that leads to another injury. There's no step one leads to step two. If you go too quickly, you're not letting something heal. If you can get the swelling down a little and he can handle the bone bruise and the pain that comes with this, then he will be able to function just fine. Will he be able to do that in that short a period? That's a big question mark. You know, it's so close to game day when it happened, within probably 48 hours or so of time, that I think there's some concern that he may not play. But I tell you what, Kevin, Travis Kelce, I've seen being talked about, oh, I don't know if he's going to play in this playoff game because he had this injury in practice or whatever it is. He seems to be able to bounce through it and get out there and play when it doesn't seem like he should. So generally, I would think he's going to play if I had to guess. And I think that he'll be able to handle the pain and get the movement. It doesn't feel comfortable. When something is bent the wrong way, it's like, ah, every step hurts. But at some point you say, it hurts no matter what, let's go play football. So I'm just so happy that it wasn't an ACL or something that puts him out for a long time, maybe for his career, those kind of things. This seems more manageable. Hyperextension is one of the better words that I hear that I think that you can recover from. So I'm optimistic that he'll be just fine. But will he be able to play in this game? You've got to say, what, 10 to 25% chance that he'll decide, I'm not effective enough out there. I don't feel comfortable enough making those sharp cuts, and therefore may miss this game. But they have a long ways off until they play the Sunday afterwards. So he'll be ready for week two for sure. But I would say I think he'll probably play.
All right, I'm putting the thing at about 50-50. And I look, we learned a lot about Andy Reid, I think, during the playoff game last year when Patrick Mahomes got hurt. And he said, no, go get it checked out, you know, his ankle. And Mahomes is like, no, I'm okay, I want to go. And he's like, no, go have the doctors check it out. Well, we know the doctors have checked this out. The question is, what kind of feedback would they typically give a head coach, whether it's the NFL or the college level or whatever? Would Andy Reid have a rule or something like that says, look, if there's any swelling left, you're not going, what would it be? Or does he just take it on, you know, Rick Burkhalter or somebody on the training staff says he can play? If Andy Reid hears that from a trusted person in the medical staff, he will let him play, right?
I would think so. Today's totally different than it was in the past. And today might even mean, Kevin, gosh, the last 2 years, the last 5 years, things have changed dramatically. Before, football coaches had a big say in it. And the doctors were kind of taught, if you're going to be a team doctor, you only tell me if it is absolutely awful and that he's going to just be ineffective on the field. It goes back to the field with the coaches so often. Is he going to be ineffective? They're like, well, he shouldn't really be playing, but then he don't become the team doctor or stay the team doctor very long. That's old school, Kevin, where the coaches intimidated the medical staff. And as long as the player said, I'm all in, coach, they would kind of find their way. It's changed completely. That is just not the way it's done now. The coaches don't rule. They have an unbelievable respect. I think Andy Reid understands the long-term effect. He's been around so long. He understands the long season. You're going to have ups and downs. You're going to miss players. That's just part of it. I mean, Chris Jones isn't going to play. Has nothing to do with injury. You just keep moving on. You keep grinding. And you think about the long-term best interest of the player, therefore the team. They got a lot of money invested. So right now, I think the thing that the doctors would say, is there any chance that he could further have injuries, like other parts of your body? Sometimes a weakness in the one place leads to overcorrection on another, and that's where you get your injury. So I think the doctors have a big say in this. The medical people will talk that through, then Andy, being the head coach, would look to Travis and basically look in his eyes, you know, understand Travis better than Travis knows himself and say, hey, can you do this? How do you feel? Those kind of things. I think that communication will be there. And I do think Andy will play it very conservatively. And you might say, what a good guy Andy Reid is. Well, I don't know. I mean, he's still old school football coach, right, Kevin? We know that deep down But I think he's saying, why would I ever risk anything with a guy like Travis Kelce or Patrick Mahomes that hurts our future in the next few months or even in the next season? They're way too valuable. And these guys are like horses. You know, horses, when they get injured, you know what happens so often? They get put down because they don't know how to relax. They don't know how to get through the injury. And I think that you look at a Patrick Mahomes and a Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid's going to be the biggest protector of those guys. He's going to listen to them, but he's going to look deep in their heart, see through what they're saying, and go, no, I'm going to decide what's best. But it does start with the doctors. If it's truly a hyperextension, bone bruise type of thing, I think the doctors are going to say thumbs up. Then it's going to be Travis saying thumbs up. And still, Andy may say, you know what? I'm not going to go there. We're not going to do that. So it'll be very interesting. But Andy would never trump out, overrule that sequence. Not anymore. 10 years ago, Andy would be winking at Travis and going, you okay? And then he'd get the right answer from the doctors, right? That's the way it used to be. No disrespect to the doctors. They tried to give these coaches good information, but they got squashed. Does that make sense? I'm not blaming the doctor.
It does. And I think if the doctor, you're 100% right. If the doctors say, hey, listen, you shouldn't play him, he's not playing. I mean, we know that now. That's a better place for pro football, college football, any level of football to be. It also reminds me of the ridiculousness of the last game that Travis Kelce missed. And I've been saying this now for 2 or 3 years. This guy can't stay healthy all the time. He's been an Ironman. He's been great in his career at this. And he's a gamer and he plays hurt and beat up and all those things. But he's going to be 34 this year. And at some point, there comes a point in time where your body can't take all of this that they ask him to take. Now, I don't know if this is it. I don't know if you factor that in. If he's 24, do you play him? And he's 34, you don't. I don't know about that. But I do know this. The last game he missed was ridiculous. They said he had no symptoms, but he tested positive for COVID, and they wouldn't let him play. That was by rule in the NFL. That's how stupid things were just 2 years ago. There's going to be all kinds of players with COVID this year, by the way, playing football. That's going to happen, period. Okay, humans get COVID, we get the flu, we get sick, and these players will play. It reminds me of the stupidity of the last time Travis Kelce missed a game.
I would just rather not go down that path. Those are such bad memories. When the Big Ten commissioner stood up and said, we're not going to play football this year, I about wanted to jump out of my house. Window, you know, no, my
the,
house be,
the best
big.
One
so I wouldn't get hurt
the
but
best
I was,
one was Northwestern's professor that said players will die, we're going to have dead football players if we do this. I'm like, oh my God,
I did not take the bait. I never went down that path. My kids were coaching and playing at that time, and I'm saying, let's get out there, let's go. And what was even more funny is the Big Ten commissioner, who now runs the Bears, by the way. He's changed jobs already. His son was at Mississippi State, and they were going to play in the SEC. That's what made it even more fun, is that his son was going to play, but he was telling the Big Ten it's unsafe to play. And then, fortunately, the Big 12's done a lot of good things the last 5 years, Kevin. The Big 12 and the SEC said, fine, we're going to play football.
Play football.
And guess who didn't want to? Who was the last to join the party, Kevin? The weakest. The Pac-12. We called them out since 2010. You and I, on air, publicly. If you want to look for the weak link in conference realignment, it's always been the Pac-12. And there's another example where they barely inched their way back into playing football during that COVID year.
Yeah.
And they don't care. And that's why they're basically gone.
All right.
Fortunately, they're joining us, and we do care. And we kept our heads about us. But, hey, for instance, Chiefs won a Super Bowl in the 2019 season. And then when they came back in 20 to have a celebration to kick off the season, Kevin, naturally, there weren't very many people in the stands. I'm glad they let some people in the stands, but there weren't a lot. It just is a great reminder that as we get ready for the kickoff of Detroit at Kansas City, that place is going to be packed. The celebration is going to be big. It'll be like it should be. The fans hugging and cheering and honoring the Hunt family. And saying, hey, we just won a Super Bowl. Let's cheer crazily on Thursday night for the nation to watch.
All right, if Kelce can't go, Noah Gray steps up. He's been wearing his Duke shirts all week, which is nice. Duke had a big win. We'll get to college football in a little bit, Stan, because we've got so much to talk about there. But the line on this game in Vegas has moved from Chiefs favored by 6.5 to Chiefs favored by 4.5. That is a lot for a tight end possibly being injured. having it move. Let's talk about the Lions here. Dan Campbell's their head coach. He's a fiery sort. He's got an unbelievable personality. He's been working all of training camp and preseason trying to ground his players. He says they basically showed up and thought they're something, and he's trying to remind them, we started 1-6 last year. You're not something when you still haven't made the playoffs and won a game. But boy, they got some pieces. Jared Goff was tremendous in the second half of last year. Aiden Hutchinson's a really good defensive player. They've got a terrific offensive line. They drafted a running back in the first round. They were top five in offense last year. How difficult is this game for the Chiefs, or does this exist? In pro football today, does it still happen that a team isn't quite ready for prime time because they haven't been there and done that?
This has the possibility of covering the whole spectrum that you laid out, Kevin. Let's start with the basics, okay? I'll pick and choose to develop this discussion this way, Kevin. The Detroit Lions are a phenomenon that's called Thanksgiving Day, that they come on every year because unbelievable tradition, and people around the country, if they're not eating their meal for Thanksgiving, turn on some football and introduce themselves to the Detroit Lions. Like, who plays for them? If Barry Sanders still play there? I mean, those kind of questions. No one watches Detroit throughout the year. They've been a complete non-factor for a long, long, long time. The Chiefs are Super Bowl champions. They're in the AFC Championship game every season that Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback. They made the Super Bowl three times in that short stint and won two. They are heavyweight champions. And here comes this little thin boxer in to play them. This is not Philadelphia at Kansas City. This is not Buffalo at Kansas City. This is Detroit. I can't believe this is the opening night game. These guys are not in the same league with the Chiefs at all. But if they were to play 17 times any week of the season, Kevin, the Chiefs would take care of Detroit with no problem. Playing them at home, better than Detroit. They're a learning group, like you said. They'll be fired up, and they'll play hard. They'll play like the Jacksonville Jaguars did last year. Remember that game where they were trying to grow up, and they onside kick, surprise onside, you know, wild and crazy, go for fourth down. You know, that kind of mentality is there for the Detroit Lions. This is not a feature start of the season Thursday night football game. They've for some reason picked Detroit and said, this cute little team is going to be very competitive. So this should be a mismatch. And if you see the game separate and you see the Chiefs grab hold of this game and play well in the first game like Andy Reid's teams normally do, you might be turning off the TV at the end as a Chiefs fan going, that was awesome. But if you're a neutral fan around the country, you're going, how in the heck did they think Detroit was going to stay with the Chiefs? Chiefs led by 10 the whole game, just dominated the game. That is very likely. But what could happen in any of the 17 weeks, I think the Chiefs would take care of Detroit. The most dangerous one is right now. So if you want to start considering that there's some danger here, I will follow that path. And here's why. NFL is competitive no matter what. You just talked about a 6.5-point line. That's a big line, but still, that is a very competitive football game. So it's the NFL. Let's give Detroit a chance. It's the first game of the season, Kevin. We have no idea what Detroit's going to really do with this team because no one does anything in preseason. So they're going to come out and show some new stuff that the Chiefs have to adapt. Okay, so that's advantage Detroit. Detroit will come out, and they have nothing to lose. Who cares if they lose by 25 points? It doesn't matter to them. They're nobody. What happens if they win? They turn the world upside down. It's like Colorado going to TCU. How much has Colorado turned the world upside down, Kevin, in college football? Detroit is going to be coming in like that, and they are going to be shooting every trick play, fourth down, go for it, whatever it is. They're going to bring blitzes. If they give them a touchdown, they don't care. They just need to try to sack the quarterback, force a punt, create havoc. Now, from a pro football perspective, let's go and evaluate them. Jared Goff was the second pick in the draft. Maybe he's the first pick in the draft. He was with the Rams, okay? I thought he was way overpicked. I didn't believe in him that much coming out of college. And he took the Rams to the Super Bowl. But they didn't really believe in him completely, and they moved him on to Detroit. So you could say that he's a disappointment at a quarterback, middle-of-the-road quarterback or worse. Who cares? Kevin, he grew up when he was at Detroit last year. He is throwing accurate passes. He's been to a Super Bowl. He's been a top pick in the NFL draft. it's now time to flip our mindset and say, not that he's a disappointment, to go back and look at his bloodlines and his drafting position and those kind of things. When people saw that capability in him, he is starting to deliver. He's a big-time quarterback right now. Is he reliable to go win a playoff game and all that? I'm not saying at that level. But you know what I talk about often, the danger factor. How dangerous could a team be if they play their very best? Well, Jared Goff is very dangerous. They're an offensive football team. They drafted Jahmyr Gibbs from Alabama, and K-State was ahead of Alabama 10-0 in the first quarter when a big play turned the whole game around. And it was Jahmyr Gibbs, running back, running a little crossing route like a wide receiver, getting the ball about 8 yards past the line of scrimmage, and then burning downfield for a big play. He is a great pass receiver, a good runner, a rookie running back that's excited. This team can run the football. They're offensive-minded. If you looked at a way to beat the Chiefs, if I were to design a way to compete with the Chiefs and looked around the NFL, I would not want a team, Kevin, that comes in and says, we're really good on defense. You know, we're a locked-down defense. We're going to shut down this team and have a feisty little 21-17 win. There's no chance that's going to work. Never. The Chiefs are going to blow through any good defense, okay?
Oh, wait a second. I want to talk to you later this year about Chiefs at Jets, because I think the Chiefs are going to struggle that night.
Okay, but the Chiefs are going to get their points. They're going to get into the high 20s, probably in the 30s, no matter how good your defense is. You know what I think you need to be ready for? If you want to get to that Jets, you better talk about Aaron Rodgers scoring, Kevin.
Yep.
Don't rely on that defense.
I hear you.
So I'm just saying, they're built to beat the Chiefs in one game. You know, they are not, it shouldn't be in this game. It should never be Detroit at Kansas City. I'm surprised the NFL did it. They're a cute little story. Dan Campbell's a cute little coach. But no, these guys are not the real deal. I'm not betting on right. Detroit in any way. But they're dangerous and they're offensive-minded.
Yep.
And Goff is good enough. He throws the ball deep downfield, Kevin. So I could see Detroit. I could make a case that Detroit scores 30-plus points. They run the ball against the Chiefs because we don't know how the run defense is going to be at the Chiefs, right? The linebacker core is really good, but is that going to make up for Chris Jones not being there? The Chiefs have never been great against the run during this whole Super Bowl run that they've been through. So could they run the ball and be effective? Goff can definitely throw it. Receivers are awesome. Running back, the guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. I could see Detroit going crazy and getting into the 30s. That doesn't mean they win. That just gives them a chance.
And
so
I think
if I were to build a team,
and you're describing,
I would build it offensively.
You're describing exactly what the NFL wants. They want a 38-35 shootout here is exactly what they want, and that's why they put this on Thursday night. I don't think a lot of folks know, and a lot of our listeners follow the NFL closely, but a lot of people turning their TVs on Thursday night are not really going to recognize that the Lions were a good offensive team last year. They don't have much of a history. My favorite Lions running joke that is all over social media, and apparently it's been going on for quite some time, is the fourth greatest player in Lions history, and I don't know who the top three are. Barry Sanders would be one. You're more of a historian than me. Who would the other two? Apparently there's an easy top three Lions of all time, but quite a discussion on who the fourth best player.
Megatron's a receiver.
Okay. And then the
out of Georgia Tech. And then I'd have to think a little bit. Bobby Lane?
Yeah, probably somebody going way back. Bobby Lane, there you go. So the
Detroit used to win before the NFL had Super Bowl.
Right. So the fourth greatest player in Lions history, they say, is Axel Foley, who is a character played by Eddie Murphy in the Beverly Hills Cop movies because he wore a Detroit Lions jacket and became very famous for that. So there's Eddie Murphy as Axel Foley is the fourth most famous Detroit Lion. I just love that.
One guy I do love, I'll mention defensively real quickly for Detroit, Aiden Hutchinson.
Super.
He played at Michigan.
Yeah.
I'm not much into the draft, Kevin. I don't say, oh, this guy's great, this guy's bad. Yeah, I don't spend a lot of time doing that. But once in a while, I'll say, this guy can play. And when I come to that conclusion, because I'm not looking to come to that conclusion, I feel very comfortable. And when we got ready for the draft two seasons ago, before last year, I go, Aiden Hutchinson, this kid's the real deal out of Michigan. He's a defensive end that can rush the quarterback. Remember, the Chiefs got two new tackles, and we saw them play in preseason very effectively for like a quarter.
Yeah.
You know, so if you see Patrick Mahomes under pressure, Aiden Hutchinson is a guy who is good enough that at the end of the year, you may be talking about him as one of the best defensive ends in the league. So he is a guy to monitor and notice for Detroit's defense.
And it's such a great story. His dad played there, and they're like a legacy family with Michigan and the Lions, and the whole, and they're all from there. It's really a great family.
And they show their family in the stands, which, you know, they don't do on Thursday Night Football that much, right? But if they did, I think his sisters are pretty good looking.
I was going okay to say it's a fine looking family. Let's just it's a fine looking family.
His sister, his friends, his girlfriend. I don't know, but when they show the picture of the family, there's usually some pretty girls included.
They can have their own reality show here very soon, if that's what they want. All right, let's move on to some college football here, Stan. Let's start with Kansas and Illinois this week. I thought Kansas in game one, man, this is tough. This is tough criticism, okay? I thought they looked either slow or tentative or something for much of that game, and maybe that was a game one thing. You know, they've talked about how much more speed they had than when Lance Leipold got there. I didn't see it much in that game, maybe until late in the game. Illinois was not great in its opener either, but they are bringing a Big Ten defense to Lawrence to play against the Jayhawks. I still like the Jayhawks in this game. They're favored by 3. I just think they can score. We don't know about Jalen Daniels. He was supposed to play last week and didn't. Did they save him for this game? We don't know. I didn't learn enough about Kansas to make any full judgments yet. What do you think about Kansas and Illinois Friday night?
I think that's really well said, and I don't know about backs. I started with that. I don't understand how this is going to play out with Jalen Daniels, and is he available or not? Jason Bean is grown up. He's a legitimate starting quarterback. He could coach. He could quarterback a team to have some pretty good success. That would be a bowl team. You know, win 6 games, 7 games. He could be a part of that. They can really run their offense. He's gotten better at choosing what he needs to do well. He's a good deep ball thrower, number one, and he's super fast when he decides to run. He's not a physical runner. If you hit him, he might fumble. He's not an instinctive runner, like knowing how to maneuver through guys right up the middle. Jalen Daniels is. He's instinctive. He throws all the balls good. You know, the short throws. He doesn't overthrow people. Jalen Daniels obviously is a step up, and it makes a difference for Kansas. Generally, I think that the Big Ten football, when you're talking about the middle of the road teams, and man, the Big Ten has a ton of them. I don't mean that as a cut down like they stink, Kevin. They're just not at all feisty for conference championship or being the national hunt, right? I mean, the Illinois, the Minnesotas, the Nebraskas, those teams all play solid football. They're competitive week after week. And Illinois is not always in that group, but they are now. Brett Bielema, I know him very well. He's a defensive coordinator at K-State, a buddy of mine in 2003 when K-State upset Oklahoma in Arrowhead Stadium and won that championship 35-7. He has been a successful head coach at Wisconsin, Arkansas. Now he's at Illinois in his third season, and he's got them playing legitimate football. He's a defensive-minded guy, and that's what they've been leaning on. Now they got a good defensive tackle, one of the best in the country. The NFL will be looking at him. They would love to play an old-school Big Ten game. They would love to play and have the final score be 24-21, something like that. If they can bog the game down, Kevin, and wait for their quarterback and their offense to kind of hit and take advantage of things here and there, then they'll be fine. But that's not the way you win in college football now. Just like with the Chiefs, I believe in Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid so much, and I'm going to talk about their offense no matter what. But in college football, I'm a firm believer that offense beats defense. You know, pitching beats hitting in the playoffs in baseball. I get it. But in football now, offenses win. And I don't know how Illinois can keep Kansas off the scoreboard. Illinois needs to have a couple of breaks. You know, how did Duke beat Clemson? You mentioned that. Well, Clemson just failed when they got down to the 10-yard line and the 5-yard line and the 1-yard line. You know, stuff like that happens to Kansas where they get stopped and get a dumb penalty. We've seen some dumb penalties by players. Like after a play's over, they shove someone and cost themselves 15 yards. Little things like that, a fumble, a missed field goal. Those kind of scenarios have got to be there, I believe, for Illinois to win this game. Because Kansas is an offensive-minded team that can score. And they'll be able to score on Illinois' defense, I believe. Now, what hurt Kansas before is their defense was so bad. And I thought that they showed pretty well, Kevin. I expect them to take a step forward. Illinois could make a scenario that makes it a lower scoring game by driving the ball slowly down the field, like converting on 3rd and 2 multiple times and taking 7 minutes off the clock a couple times, you know, a couple touchdown drives, to take half a quarter, make the possession number go down tremendously. Those are the things Illinois needs to do. I think Kansas is better. I play this game out in my mind over and over, and I just keep pointing to Kansas, pointing to Kansas, pointing to Kansas. Illinois' defense is not dominant. They were better last year than they are this year, Kevin. Can't talk about what last year's defense was. They're not last year's defense. And offensively, they're very iffy. They kind of chug around. They don't dictate to you. They don't dominate. I watched that game incredibly close. The reasons are pretty easy, Kevin, if I tell you. My son Stanton is the special teams coordinator at Toledo. They played Toledo. I watched the whole game. You know, Toledo was the better team. Toledo blew it. And Illinois got so lucky after Toledo was ahead by 2 scores and threw a pick six. That's how Illinois got some momentum. Illinois got momentum and got ahead by 8, Kevin. After being down by 2 scores, Illinois has a rush of activity late in the third quarter and early in the fourth. At home, good crowd. They have Toledo down by 8. It's over, right? Kevin, you've seen this 100 times. Nice little fight by Toledo. Kevin, Toledo came back, had the guts and the capability to come back and take the lead over Illinois by 1. Missed the 2-point conversion. And now, with less than 2 minutes left in the game, Illinois is back up about their own 25 or 30-yard line, 4th and 5 or 7 or whatever. Their quarterback gets killed because the Toledo defensive lineman goes right by the right tackle. Somehow, he gets the ball off, and it doesn't affect the throw, and he throws a 30-yard pass up the right sideline, just a desperate throw, and this kid makes an unbelievable catch. He makes the greatest play of the night. It's a first down, they get in field goal range, and they win the game. It was 1 millimeter from them giving Toledo the ball back and walking away with a 1-point loss after having an 8-point lead. Illinois is not great. They're just good. Vilma's a good coach. He will try to build them up, but they can be so exposed. Their offensive line is not going to protect the quarterback. The quarterback's not great. Illinois is not as good as Kansas unless Kansas' defense starts blowing holes through it like it's had in the last 5 years. Yeah. So if Kansas' defense does not improve, we can make a case for Illinois. But if Kansas' defense has improved, I don't see how Kansas doesn't win.
All right, K-State host Troy, and this is Chris Kleiman's been standing on top of the mountain the entire offseason shouting to anybody who wants to listen that he's worried about the Troy game. I think what he's trying to avoid is what happened against Tulane last year when Tulane came to Manhattan early and beat Kansas State. He doesn't have the same problem that he had last year in the Tulane game. He's got his quarterback position is just better. He's just got more options offensively on how to score points and move the ball. So I don't really see that happening. This line's pretty big. I think it's up somewhere maybe like 16 points or something. But I did hear the Troy coach say on Tuesday something I don't ever remember a coach saying. Troy's good. Would they win 10 games last year or more? I mean, they're good, right? This is a really good team. And he said, if we don't play better than we played in week 1, we're about to get blown out, is what he said. I don't think I've ever heard a coach say that. Is that true or is that hyperbole for his team?
Well, it's true. I know kind of through association, John Sumrall, the head coach. He was the coach of the year in the Sun Belt. They were 12-2. They were ranked at the end of the year number 19 in the country, the first time Troy has ever been ranked in the final polls, Kevin. They've been an FBS team only since 2001. They won big at the FCS level. They won the 5th time straight in their bowl game. They beat UTSA. You know how good UTSA is. They beat them. They have the second longest winning streak in the country right now, Kevin, going back to last year. Second longest in the country. 12 straight wins. Only Georgia, with 18, has won more games. They come from the Sun Belt Conference. Well, Chris Kleiman, K-State fans, have you heard of Arkansas State? They upset K-State in that COVID year. They're from the Sun Belt. Have people learned about Texas State, Kevin? Did you see what they did to Baylor?
Sure.
Well, that's a Sun Belt team in their division. So they're the best of their division. They have a coach who has been there before with Neil Brown. Neil Brown, the coach of West Virginia, did a great job at Troy before he got that job. Sumrall was on his staff. So was Vic Koning, a very good defensive coordinator. You might remember him, Kevin. I played with him. when K-State went to the first bowl game ever in 1982, the Independence Bowl. Yes, we went to a bowl game, Kevin, before Bill Snyder. No one remembers that, but he was on that team. He was coaching as a defensive coordinator for Neil Brown when John Summerall, defensive coach, was on the staff. So this guy has some experience, knows what he's talking about, and the thing that he has is a team that knows how to win, doesn't even consider losing, and that's powerful. Kevin, that's powerful in football. So let's don't disrespect. They're a fast, feisty team, but they're smaller, okay? They do not look like a Big 12 team when they're walking on the field, and they were awesome on defense last year. They allowed only 17.1 points a game, Kevin. They won close games. Do you realize Troy won 5 games last year when they scored 18 points or less? They relied on their defense. Almost all those guys graduated, Kevin. He knows what he's talking about. They gave up 30 points to Stephen F. Austin. Their defense is completely converted over. They can run with a Troy reputation and say, hey, we're the Trojans, and we got a 12-game winning streak. But this defense is not the same. They had a defensive linebacker who has more tackles than any FBS player in his career in history, Kevin. Carlton Marshall has more tackles than anybody in NCAA history. He graduated. They're not the same team. K-State's way better than these guys. Okay. So unless K-State stubs their toe and gets into a overlook the game, get ready for Mizzou, pat themselves on the back for how well they did last week in their game. They just played such a clean game, Kevin, other than one interception early. And when they had interception, guess what the defense did? When Simo intercepted a pass and returned it into K-State territory, the game was only 7-0. You know what K-State's defense did? Drove them back 15 yards in 3 plays and made them punt. I mean, it was domination, shutout football. K-State was good against the run, only 6 yards by Simo. The pass defense was very, very good. And Will Howard, unbelievable performance throwing the football. K-State was very good. Unless they get complacent, Kevin, they're way better than Troy. Last year's Troy was better than this year's Troy. That's one of the big stories. And I think that's what John Summerall is telling you. He's like, if we don't clean up things,
we're in trouble.
We could be in trouble. Now, they did turn over the ball last week, Kevin, and that's what he's going to talk to his team about. Yeah. He's not going to degrade them and make them think they can't compete with K-State. That's not a mentality you have when you won 12 straight. But they turned it over 4 times. So let's just assume that they would have beaten Stephen F. Austin 48-13. They'd feel better about themselves. But this is a good matchup for K-State. I went into this season saying, Demo, 11th-ranked team in FCS, is a dangerous team. Troy, with 12 wins last year, won their conference, beat Coastal Carolina in the championship game, won their bowl game with a good coach that knows about Troy. I thought Troy would be very, very dangerous. When I started studying them, I don't want to be overconfident as a K-Stater, so I need to shut up here, but I'm like, no, they are not the same team they were last year. Okay. So I think K-State can be physical with them, beat them up, and expose their defense. Before I just blow Troy off, let me say this. Their quarterback, Gunnar Watson, a 6th-year senior, and he throws the ball well, Kevin. He's an NFL quarterback. He doesn't run at all. He throws the ball well. And then this Kimani Vidal, before we write off this, don't forget that in 3 of his last 5 games, in 3 of his last 5 games, he's gained over 200 yards rushing. He gained 248 yards rushing last game against Stephen F. Austin. He had a 59-yard run and a 53-yard reception. So I sounded a little too overconfident. My message is Troy's not the same as they were last year, but if K-State jacks around and lets Vidal get running, there's a very good case that you run the clock down if you can run the football. Biggest key for K-State, stop the run. Vidal. Troy record, 248 yards rushing last week, Kevin. So you just know where the battle's going to start. In the K-State front, stop the run. If they can, then K-State should have a nice run, an easy win. If you can burn clock and run the football, every minute you let Troy in the game, Kevin, they're going to be feisty. Because the dangerous teams in football are the ones that believe. And they ought to believe after 12 straight wins.
All right, Missouri has Middle Tennessee, and Missouri has to not look forward to the K-State game as well. They're going to play each other, obviously, next week. What did you learn from the quarterbacks in Missouri's first game? Is this all Brady Cook at this point, or is it still a situation where Sam Horn, in a few weeks, maybe progresses to a point where they like that stronger arm and maybe I'm not sure what to take away. I just know that Cook was the better player in game one. What did you make of the quarterbacks?
Well, if we were to start talking about this situation in preseason and just had our heads calmly there, Kevin, and it didn't have anything that diverts our attention, like how the game played out or what the quarterbacks look like, I would bet on Brady Cook being a starter for Missouri. That's just the way it works. He's kind of like an Alex Smith type of player. He's a good runner, decent passer, great kid, leader that has experience in college football. He was hurt last year and fought through it like a warrior and took all the arrows everyone threw at him and said, you know, you're not very good. And he's like, hey, you know, if you knew how bad I was hurt right now, you might not talk that way. So I think Brady Cook's going to win the job and be the quarterback. Eli Drinkwitz, though, seems to have an agenda that I never understand, by the way. When everyone told me he was a great coach when he started out of Missouri, I go, I don't know if I believe this stuff. This guy's energetic and he's fun. And it seemed like all the Missouri fans are completely bought off. This guy's great. Last year when K-State got ready to play Missouri, I studied them to the nth degree, and I go, wait a second, this guy's never done anything. And he was a one-year head coach at App State. He didn't recruit that team. He didn't develop the roster. And I started having more questions about Eli Drinkwitz. So this team had some potential. Last year, when they beat Georgia up, and they did, go watch the tape. They were better than Georgia, Kevin, for 58 minutes. Georgia should have lost that game. That's how well Missouri can play. The defense is good. I thought my impressions were that the running backs of Schrader looked better than they did last year and Pete. I thought the offensive line came off the ball. So they're going to be able to run the ball a little bit better. I think that physicality is going to help. The quarterback position, I'll say it's unlikely that Sam Horn is ready to be a great quarterback yet. Yet. That doesn't mean I'm not on his bandwagon that he may be a great quarterback. Skylar Thompson's an NFL player for K-State, right? It took him a while to grow and develop. Will Howard, this time last year, Kevin, all my friends were telling me, I sure hope that Adrian Martinez doesn't get hurt, because if Will Howard quarterbacks, K-State's not going to win a game. And I was like, you guys are idiots. Will Howard's good. He's just developing. Well, I think that about Sam Horn. When he ripped that pass down the middle, Kevin, I don't know if you got a chance to see that Missouri game, but he had a 31-yard gain down the middle. That pass is something different.
It's arm talent.
Brady Cook's not going to give you that.
Right?
He's looking to complete a pass at 5 yards. He's taught modern football, don't turn it over, don't take a sack, sack equals punt, and complete the pass and see what happens. So he's looking to complete the short pass all the time. Sam Horn's eyes were further upfield and ripped that pass. If he can do that consistently, then I think Sam Horn could take Missouri to another level. But guess what? He might throw that pass and then throw two interceptions that Brady Cook wouldn't have thrown, and Missouri would be in a worse position. I'm not sure what Eli Drinkwitz is trying to do. My only guess is, with this quarterback discussion, like saying we got a competition and it's wide open or whatever he's trying to propose out there, I think maybe it's that transfer portal. Like, let's keep Sam engaged. Let's let him know that we love him and that he's going to be a star here. Let's give him a little love and tell everyone it's a quarterback competition. I could see Sam Horn being a great quarterback at Missouri at some point, maybe even this year. But I think creating a quarterback controversy and all the stuff that's happening around Eli Drinkwitz doesn't make any sense to me. I think more than likely they should get with Brady Cook, go out there and work against Middle Tennessee, get working, and they have a chance to beat K-State. You know why they have a chance? Because they were better than Georgia last year for a game. They'll have those games, Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
And you know how geared up they're going to be? And they got to hope K-State's complacent, because every K-State fan and student who has any contact, social media-wise or on campus, talking to a K-State player, totally disrespects Mizzou. I mean, that is rear-view mirror, okay?
They better not. That,
hey, Mizzou, they stink. Well, that's not the way it works,
right,
Kevin. It's
not
a whole new year.
I know.
I expect Missouri to play lights out.
I agree.
When K-State goes there. That doesn't mean K-State can't win, but if they let their guard down, Mizzou will physically beat you up. They do play in the SEC, Kevin. They know what physicality means. So Missouri, you know, they pop up and will play unbelievably. Do I believe in them on a consistent level? No, but I would more believe in Brady Cook than trying to create some quarterback issue. Let Sam Horn grow, get into ball games. For those who love Sam Horn and say he didn't give a chance, I say it's not Eli Drinkwitz's fault. It was the defense. They started out on defense against South Dakota in the third quarter, and they stood there. He stood on the sideline as 8 minutes of game time went by. Just took all the wind out of the game. It's the defense's fault, not the coaches, that Sam Horton didn't get a throw more and those kind of things. I just don't know why they're even talking about controversy. Just, they should say, Adrian Martinez last year, think about K-State. What did they do? I mean, what does Chris Klieman do? He had three NFL quarterbacks in one room at North Dakota State, Kevin. North Dakota State. And right now his quarterback room is stuffed. Stuffed with excellence. But you know what he did last year? Adrian Martinez, you're the starter. Will Howard to back up. Get ready. That's what Missouri should do. And then if Sam Horn gets an opportunity and ends up being a star at the end of the year and no one remembers Brady Cook's name, let it happen organically. Yeah, I don't know why they create this controversy.
Right. Okay, I don't want anybody to take this last topic seriously, and we won't spend a lot of time on this because I got to let you go. I've kept you way too long, as I always do. But I want people to remember where they heard this first. Deion Sanders won a football game at TCU with the Colorado Buffaloes on Saturday. The Dallas Cowboys haven't even played a game yet this year. There are already people thinking Deion Sanders is the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, replacing Mike McCarthy. How insane is that? But also at the same time, how believable is that if Coach Prime keeps winning?
There's no limit to what he might do if things continue to go well. Because he was an analyst on TV not long ago. Then he was a high school coach. Then he went to historically black college. Then he went to Colorado. And if this is any hint of what he might be, the guy can relate to people. He's a leader, Kevin. When he was with the San Francisco 49ers, you know what they did? They busted through the Cowboys and won a Super Bowl. People may not remember this time period. When Jimmy Johnson was there and Troy Aikman, the Cowboys won the Super Bowl in 92 and 93. Deion went from Atlanta to San Francisco. Guess who won in 94? Not Dallas. San Francisco, Kevin. San Francisco got over the hump. Why is that? Well, I can tell you Ken Norton is a big leader at linebacker. He left Dallas and went to San Francisco. But probably the biggest reason is not Steve Young and the 49ers. They were great. Not Jerry Rice. It's probably Deion Sanders. That he brought a confidence and swagger like we are going to win. And they won the 1994 season Super Bowl. You know what happened next? Jerry Jones bought out as much money as he could ever find and overpaid for Deion Sanders. You know who won the Super Bowl in 1995, Kevin? The Cowboys. With Deion Sanders. He caught a long post pass at the beginning of the game as a receiver. Has Jerry Jones ever reached out and said, we need you, Deion? Kevin, you bring up an interesting subject. If he does some things at Colorado, people might say, well, I bet he leaves Colorado and goes to Michigan or, you know, fill in the blank where he ought to go next, Ohio State. Why not the pros?
I hear you.
When they had a pregame, Fox had an interview. Right, a pre-game interview. You know who they had? ESPN did. You know who they had do the interview? Not their normal announcers. They had Troy Aikman go talk to him, Kevin, because Deion is hard to get to. Like, he doesn't just want to hang out with anybody. So they brought Troy Aikman off of Monday Night Football to do a college football interview because that's the level Deion Sanders expects. So you bring in the big, big guy, Troy Aikman, the starting quarterback at that time, just to do an interview. This guy has a chance to be elite. The big thing is his son. His son is an NFL quarterback, man. Wow, he is good. I saw him play at historically black college with Jackson State. He's incredible, and he is ready for the NFL. He is calm and confident. Yeah. Not
it
cocky.
Could be a package deal. So, it could be if you draft him, you can maybe get dad as the coach. That's what it could be.
Yeah.
He may hang around and wait till his kid gets drafted and say, I'm going to go coach my kid. Anything's possible, Stan. Anything certainly is possible.
I cannot wait this week. I cannot wait for Nebraska.
Colorado.
With Coach Rhule.
Yeah.
At Colorado.
Yeah. Two totally different teams.
What an unbelievable game, and anything can happen.
Complete opposites.
You wouldn't be surprised if Colorado came down and Nebraska caught him off guard. And
buddy, these teams are complete opposites. They are complete opposites.
Yeah. Complete opposites.
Yeah.
Defense against the Flash.
Should be fun.
That was so impressive. I know we don't have time to get into it, but the TCU people are so confident after last year, Kevin. They think Sonny Dykes is like Mac Brown and that they're Texas.
They don't play defense, dude.
Around the TCU people, I'm like, no, Sonny Dykes is not. No, you guys aren't done. No.
No.
So this is a little bit to do, Kevin, with TCU having a magical year last year and just being a good Big 12 team.
Yeah, they won a lot of close games. They don't really play defense. They won a lot of close games last year. TCU's good. I won't disparage them, but they're not complete. They just don't strike me as a complete football team. And they really didn't strike me as that last year. And they won some wild games. They really, truly did. And you got to have that to have a magical season. You got to do that. But it's very, very difficult to replicate. And they certainly weren't able to do that against Colorado on Saturday. Stan, I'm buckled up, man. I'm ready to go. You got me fired up. I'm in a great mood. Thank you, sir. As always, you are the best.
Thanks, Kevin. So much fun to talk about football. And let's kick off this NFL season and show Detroit that they should only be on in Thanksgiving.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you.
Take care.
There it is. Stan Weber with your Thanksgiving forecast. Lions only on Thanksgiving, he says. We don't need them on this Thursday night to open the season. We got a final coming right up. That is brought to you by the New Car Image online at thenewcarimage.com. If you'd like to get your car detailed, serviced, licensed, whatever, they'll do it all for you. Call Brad at the New Car Image, 816-499-1470. That's 816-499-1470 or online at thenewcarimage.com. Earth Effects Outdoor is your go-to landscape company. You want to do some great landscaping this fall? Earth Effects Outdoor is there for you. They're online at eeoutdoor.com, anywhere in the Kansas City area. What a wonderful time to build fire pits, hardscapes, lighting, maybe plant some new trees this fall. It's a great time to do it. Aeration, overseeding, all those things. eeoutdoor.com, 816-478-7700 for Earth Effects Outdoor Living. And Advantage Termite and Pest Control coming to our house on Thursday. We got something digging in our mulch, and we're just not sure what kind of critter we may or may not have. They're the experts. We'll ask them and see if we need to set a trap or something, but something's tearing some stuff up, and we're not sure exactly what it is. It's not anything I've seen before, but Advantage will know, and so they're coming out. They're going to bring their critter control out on Thursday, 913-768-8989 for, you know, bugs, pests, crickets, spiders this time of year, things like that, or actual wildlife. You got wildlife problems, they have a wildlife division as well. 913-768-8989 online at advantagetpc.com. Our final is the grossest, the most disgusting final we'll ever have here. Ever. I promise there will be nothing this hideous again. I don't know how I can't share this story. We've all been on airplanes. We've all been miserable on airplanes. When I was a kid, the first time I went on an airplane, I think I was 13 years old. And people smoked on the airplane, and it was awful. They used to serve bad food on airplanes. Then along came an airline called, I think it was called Midwest Express. And they baked chocolate chip cookies on the airplanes because the airplanes came with ovens. They're like, we got all these old airplanes with ovens, but we're not doing the gravy dinners anymore. Let's make the plane smell like chocolate chip cookies. I'm like, well, this is really nice. Very nice. I like that a lot. But most times, it's somebody who fell asleep and just sits there and farts, or somebody that stinks or sweats or is gross or offensive. It's not fun. We know this. But never has it been as bad as it was this week. Atlanta to Barcelona, Delta flight, 6 hours plus. 1 hour in, a passenger gets sick, goes running for the lavatory with diarrhea, and loses all control. Up and down the aisle, running to the lav, like 30 feet of diarrhea, running to the bathroom. Uncontrollable. Disgusting. The plane turned around, went back to Atlanta. They landed. One passenger tweeted, they cleared us number two for landing. I assume you get that joke. That's gross. The plane was flying to Barcelona the next day. The crew ripped out all the carpet and redid all the flooring and put in new carpet overnight, and the plane was back in service. We've all been on bad flights. We've had delays. We've had problems. We've never had anything like that Delta flight. Never, ever, ever. It's so disgusting. Oh, there's your final. I promise I'll keep them clean from here going forward at KKHI.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.